You are listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. My name is Priscilla Atropine, and I'm your hostess for Local Fauna. You can also join me Saturday nights at midnight with Cyprianus, St. Cyprian, at midnight on the Unquiet Meadow every week. And of course, both shows are archived at ashevillefm.org all week and available streaming right now. Programming support is brought to you by Buchi Kombucha. Buchi Kombucha blends probiotic tonics using the 2,000-year-old craft brewing tradition with fair trade organic teas, fruits, spices, and medicinal herbs. For more information, drinkbuchi.com and Facebook. With me in the studio today, as you may have seen on social media, and I'm very excited and honored to bring these two very loving and learned women into the studio, blessing our space here at Asheville FM, the Reverend Canon Millie Morrow.
Good morning.
And the Reverend Canon Naomi Tutu.
Good morning.
And these wonderful people are from the Cathedral at All Souls, of All Souls. In Biltmore Village, which is a over 100-year-old cathedral that I will talk a little bit about in a moment, explain a little bit about our history here for those of you who are not local and listening to the show. And I met the Reverend Millie Morrow in a very unusual way, not for me, but
not for Asheville.
For you, not for Asheville. So she came to me for a bit of tattoo work in memorial of your father. And we had the most wonderful conversation that I deeply enjoyed. And I don't have the opportunity to learn very much or to interact and learn very much about Christianity in general. So it was really enlightening for me. I know that's odd in this company to say that, but it's true. So it's really an honor to have met you, and we've enjoyed each other's company a good bit since then. And one of the things that we talked about was the concept of the sacraments and the beauty of the rituals held within the sacraments and their history. And I had told her that I have never been able to take the Eucharist. And so she invited me to come, and I got to hear Naomi present, which was really fantastic. So I guess I would like to just give our listeners a little piece of history, and then I will stop talking. The cathedral was built by George and Edith Vanderbilt in 1896 and was consecrated as All Souls Episcopal Church, and was designed by architect Richard Morris Hunt, who was also the architect of the Biltmore House, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and the Statue of Liberty Monument and the grounds designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, who also was the designer of Central Park and the designer of the beautiful drive up to the Biltmore Estate. And of course, George Vanderbilt was the son of the Commodore Vanderbilt, who I guess made his fortune in shipping across Atlantic. And so the areas of focus for the two of you in terms of your work at the cathedral, and I would say leave no detail out, pretend we know nothing. Millie, you are, your focus is pastoral care.
Yes.
And congregation development, and you have a history in counseling survivors of violent crime. And my, I think our conversation kind of sparked because I was talking to you about memorial work. And so tell us a little bit about your work in the congregation.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for having us. And I, too, am so grateful for the way that we met and for the work that you did in honor of my dad. So grateful to have met you. I believe that it was an important moment for both of us. So I'm super grateful for your presence in the community and for this show and for having us here with you today.
Thank you.
And I'm grateful for this radio station and for what you all do for the community. So my work at the Congregation of All Souls is to assist folks in their life in the congregation as pastoral care. So I'm a social worker. I was a social worker before I became a priest, which is a part of my story about how it is that I came to the priesthood. And so I continue that work at All Souls by helping people in just life stages and in developing in their faith. And I do that through counseling and through family work and through supporting people as they think about the big questions in life with faith and just in issues around birth and death and how it is they receive the sacraments and what that means to them. I also work with the church in helping us grow as a congregation and developing lay leadership, because often in the church we have a kind of production consumption model that the clergy are there to produce something and then the congregants are there to consume it. But in the work of the church, being the wider church, what we really are there for is to develop each other's gifts, because we each have gifts to offer in building the kingdom of God. And so my work is, which is also pastoral care, is to really be able to see people's gifts for what they are and then help them offer that to the building of our congregation and the building of the kingdom of God.
And your, you see, and my understanding is that you see the community in Asheville at large as the as your parish. So everyone, I mean, one of the things that I noted was very interesting about the way that the cathedral functions is that you open arms even to, say, like the Mother Grove Goddess Temple, who has had events there, because they are a part of your parish, whether they are Episcopalian or not.
In fact, yes, definitely. Wonderful. There's a nickname for our church called All Sorts. For that very reason, because you know, we do strive to be inclusive and welcoming and open to everyone.
Well, I very much appreciate that, and of course, that's an architectural gem. You know, I'm a little bit of a history nut, so that's wonderful to know that the space is available to an extent. You know, for right use, and that's very generous. And Naomi, you are a missioner for racial and economic equity and the director of Kairos West in West Asheville. So tell us a little bit about your work in the community.
Yeah, that sounds, the title sounds awesome, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, I love just, it.
I told friends when I was being interviewed for the job that seriously, if somebody had asked me to write a title and a job description that I could dream about, that was the closest that I could have ever come up with myself. So, and my position is a new position in the church. I mean, at All Souls, that has come out of the work that the church did at looking at itself and what is the role and the place of All Souls in Asheville, in Biltmore Village, in Western North Carolina, and in the world as a whole. And what are the challenges and opportunities that the church has, All Souls, but also the wider church in our world today. And the congregation came to the realization that probably the largest challenges facing us as a church and the world is racial injustice and economic inequity. And so wanted to be at the forefront of that struggle for justice, which is the church's DNA, right? It had, from our formation, has been about justice. That is what Jesus taught. That is justice in the world, peace in the world, care for one another, recognizing God in each other. And so that's the racial and economic equity, is saying as a church we're going back to our foundations. And then Kairos West is a community center that was Millie's brainchild and baby, that is a place that the church has offered a space for the community to to focus on what are the gifts as well as the needs of the community, mm-hmm. and use that space to incubate ideas and organizations and people who are about the work of economic and racial equity.
Right. And as always, with any effort to change the dominant paradigm, there have been bumps, which we'll talk about in a bit when we get into the meaning of that community center and its role in the community, because we've had a pretty big local struggle about the community center's presence. And my understanding is that the creation of the community center came out of a listening process, which there is more information available about on your website. Koinonia is what you call it. I'm curious about the origins of that word, and what it says on the website is that it is about human communion, human participation and engagement, and that it is the name that you give for the work and the listening process, and that the cathedral, that the church had spent many years working on the preservation and development of the building, the property, and working to build the congregation, and that there was, I guess, a moment of kind of feeling settled and on top of things, and then the decision was to reach out and listen to the community and assess what the need was and assess what the church's role would be. And so the decision was made, it settled on the working in racial and economic equity. And so were you there at that time, Millie? Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, and so first I want to say that Kairos West began almost 6 years ago in West Asheville at 742. Haywood Road, and now it's at 610 Haywood Road, but that was before the Koinonia process. Mm-hmm. So Kairos West began 5 years ago after a trip to Cuba, and when we were in Cuba, we were witnessing the way it is that they do church together in Cuba and how different that is from the way that we do church here together. So when we came back, we looked at the issues that were facing West Asheville and really all of Asheville that had been facing us for a long time around gentrification and economic development. And so we decided to create a community center in West Asheville and called it Kairos West. And Kairos means abundant time as opposed to linear time. And so our thought was in Kairos, we want to open up the vast possibilities for people to explore themselves and the way that they're being developed within the context of the city and what it is that they can do to impact the development of the city in a positive way. Like Naomi was saying, to look at what are the gifts and the assets of the community and build on those, empower those, and lift them up. As we're seeing buildings being developed and businesses being developed, our response to that was, what about the people? What about the social capital? How can we really invest in social capital? So Kairos West was birthed from a trip to Cuba, which is really important to know. And so that was in existence for several years as the cathedral is working on its infrastructure. When we finished rebuilding the roof, we looked at the abundance that we had as a community and we said, what are we going to do with this abundance? Now that we've built our roof, as Naomi says, we need to focus now on our foundation. So we started to ask ourselves the questions of where it is we want to invest and who do we want to be? What people do we want to be in this city? So we began a listening process. The cathedral began a listening process that was very much lay-led. And by lay people, I mean folks that aren't clergy. So these folks started to invite people from the community to come in and speak to us about issues facing Asheville, whether that was housing, economic insecurity, food insecurity, food scarcity, just a whole series. And those are all posted on our website. You can listen to all of the listening sessions we did. We made available for other people to listen to as well.
We'll share that link.
And so from that listening process came the focus of racial and economic equity. And so it was from that point that we looked at the fact that Kairos really needed to move in a different direction. And we needed a leader for this work that we were doing around economic and racial justice. And so that's when we reached out to Naomi and began that process. And then she came to us shortly after that.
Okay, well, let's talk about Kairos a little bit then. And I'll also just mention that I served, civics used to be, before community radio, my number one hobby. And I served on the Downtown Commission, which is a volunteer-based development group that all development plans go through the Downtown Commission for review. And there's mandatory review, voluntary compliance. And in that process, especially in focus groups, because there was a big change in the Unified Development Ordinance that happened during the bubble in the mid-2000s, last decade. But there was a real question about who was a stakeholder. Mm-hmm. And I felt that in that question, which was glossed over most of the time for expediency's sake, mm-hmm. but the idea of who was a stakeholder usually settled on who had land. Mm-hmm. So who mm-hmm. had equity or land in mm-hmm. the question was really, you know, mm-hmm. who got to speak to what the value of something was and mm-hmm. how it was utilized in terms of community and economic development.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The more I learned about economic development and its role in community development, the more I realized that it seemed to me that social justice issues were economic mm-hmm. in nature mm-hmm. and that those questions of who has a voice underpinned all of those issues. So,
which is why land is always central to conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so in recreating our relationship with the land, you know, and we'll touch on this a little bit later in the hour, understanding the perspective of the poor and looking at questions from that perspective mm-hmm. is one of the important pieces. So, Naomi, tell us a little bit about we can talk about what happened with Kairos and the community mm-hmm. and the city's perspective and how, you know, the city is always brought in to play arbiter in these kinds of things. And mm-hmm. and talk about your vision for the community center going forward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, as you know, as Millie said, the idea for Kairos came out of the church trip to Cuba, where they experienced a Kairos in Cuba, which was a community center that really brought people together. And as they were together for fresh cold water in that context, also encouraged people to talk to one another, to bring to each other problems and solutions and ideas for improving the community. And so Millie thought, this is what we need in West Asheville, well, in Asheville as a whole. We need that space where people can interact with one another and bounce ideas off one another and let themselves and the world know that we are people with gifts and talents and ideas and ways of building community. And so Kairos West still is that place where, for instance, in the evenings, we open the space to organizations to have meetings, events, teach-ins that to organizations particularly who could not afford to rent a space or so that it's a space that gives the community a place to showcase what it is they know, what their experiences are, what it is that they have to offer the community. And also during the day, we open the space to the larger community to come in. So during lunch, we have partnered for the last couple of years with the Asheville Poverty Initiative and 12 Baskets for a sit-down meal for members of the community, and everyone is welcome. And they would have at the table somebody who is at this moment suffering homelessness, but also at the table have a police officer having lunch. And then after 12 Baskets has used the space, in the afternoon, we have that community space that was Kairos in Cuba. That is an open space where when people walk in, they are welcomed, they are seen, and that it is an opportunity to sit and talk. And if you come in, you will sometimes find people playing backgammon, hear people playing the guitar and singing, have people in conversation about what is it that they envision, what they dream of for the community. And I'm not sure that people, those people who would have been identified as stakeholders in your description, recognize how much, in fact, we as a community lose when we shut off the voices of a huge proportion of our population because they don't own property.
Right.
And we lose ideas, we lose new ways of doing things, we lose a sense of community. And that is what we are trying to offer at Kairos West.
Mm-hmm. And so part of the community struggle that occurred was because of feeding folks, having a green space where people could hang out. The Steady Collective was there doing needle exchange. Is that right?
They were upstairs in Firestorm.
Oh,
but in
okay.
610, so 610 is a shared space. So Firestorm Cafe Bookstore is upstairs. Kairos West is downstairs. And so okay. Steady Collective runs out of Firestorm.
Okay, I see. And so just to paint the picture for folks who aren't aware of what happened, there's a very popular restaurant right next door.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of folks hanging out in the green space. And there was conflict, I guess, between guests and folks. Or, I mean, what was the issue about that eventually led to closing up, you know, the green space?
So I want to begin by saying we don't have anybody's voice here from the city. So as we discuss this, I just want to own that this is coming from our perspective, and always
sure.
It's going to be incomplete. But my perspective is that the numbers of folks that we began having meals with when we were at 742 Haywood Road were maybe 35 at the most, 35 people showing up for our lunch together. And when we moved into the new space, those numbers dramatically increased because the need is so great,
mm-hmm.
not only for food. If you need food, you can get food anywhere. I mean, Asheville is full of food. So it was really the scarcity of community and belonging that a lot of folks were suffering from. And so a great deal of people were showing up for community and also receiving nourishment by food. A lot of these folks, because they are not stakeholders, they are not landowners, were enjoying the reality of being able to have a small piece of land, right, where they could be, where they belonged, where they were welcomed and received. And so those numbers were larger than we had dealt with in the past. So I'm not sure that we were particularly prepared for the way that so we hadn't had the essential conversations with our neighbors about what is this going to look like when folks start showing up, because we honestly didn't realize that.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And if now looking back, hindsight's 2020, I would have begun those conversations before we even opened our doors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I own that as a learning opportunity. And then just within the setting of gentrification, I think that we begin to protect our self-interest. So there is that too, right? So once you become a landowner, once you are identified as a stakeholder, what do you have to do in order to protect that place and that role? Because we know how much power comes with that. So I believe that many places on Haywood Road that own land that are stakeholders, this is their livelihood, they were beginning to see negative consequences of having people whom the world might view as unsightly and might upset their vision of the way Asheville is going, right? And what Asheville is. And doesn't look like progress if you have people who are addicted and poverty-ridden and hungry hanging out on the corners asking for money. Mm-hmm. That disrupts our idea of progress. And then we want to go back to our idea of progress. So the way that we do that is get rid of those people.
Yeah.
And so I think that the city used the notion of zoning law in order to say, you can't do what you're doing here.
I see.
And that's historically always been used to further oppress marginalized people. The way that we control land is the way we control people. Mm-hmm. And so zoning mm-hmm. laws are historically a tool of the oppressor to further marginalize those that aren't deemed as stakeholders.
Wow. Right on.
Mm-hmm. It didn't work, by the way. In case you haven't noticed, we're still there. 6'10".
Well, I think on that note, I'd like to read the prayer from your Koinonia page as an invocation. And I invite, if you're listening, to let these words sink. And then we will hear a little bit of music that Millie has selected and catch our breath. And we'll come back in just a minute. O God of all creation, fill us with passion to live as neighbors and to uphold the dignity of all in our community. Guide and support us through Koinonia to follow your example and command to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with you. Transform us through your Spirit that in all we do we may embody your love and compassion and be reconciled with you and all creation. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
This is Priscilla Atropine, and you're listening to Local Fauna on Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. The Sunrise Coalition for Recovery and Wellness is dedicated to assisting persons with mental illness and substance abuse problems and those returning to the community from incarceration. They provide moral recognition therapy and wellness recovery action plans, as well as warm information line for health and social system navigation. More info on their Facebook at www.sunriseinasheville.org or at 828-552-3858. This is why I love community radio. I'm here in the studio with the Reverend Canon Millie Morrow and the Reverend Canon Naomi Tutu from the Cathedral of All Souls in Biltmore Village. And we've been talking about racial and economic inequity in our community and in the world. And we've touched on some really powerful points. And of course, I'll be sharing links on social media for everyone on the Local Fauna page so that you can follow up and hear more from them. Both of them have blogs and sermons online that you can hear and read about the cathedral's work in the community. And Naomi is the director of Kairos West Community Center in West Asheville. And we were just talking about the church's work in terms of reaching out to listen to the community and to hear voices that are otherwise marginalized in traditional economic and community development processes, and particularly the work that they term Koinonia. Koinonia.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me some more about that, Naomi.
So Koinonia, the term actually means community and spirit-filled community, and it comes out of the early church, particularly in reading in the Acts of the Apostles and talking about how the early Christians lived in community, where they cared for one another, and so the tagline for the early Christians was, see those early, see these Christians, how they love one another, because that was a community that made sure that nobody was hungry, nobody went without, that they shared with one another what they had. And that has been the basis of the work that is going on at All Souls, is saying we are returning to our foundation as the church in the world, that it is about, so Koinonia is about, yes, what we do out in the community, but it is also about who we are and how we live our witness in the world. And that was the process that highlighted then for the church the need to focus on racial and economic inequities in this community and in the larger world. And so, and beautifully enough, this past weekend was our parish retreat, and we had a time to talk about people's experience of the Koinonia process and what it means to be part of it. And one of our parishioners said, "Oh, I get it. Koinonia is not part of All Souls. All Souls is part of Koinonia." And that is the truth. That is who we are meant to be as the church. Well, that's, with a capital C.
Yeah. That's it's a different experience than I've had coming up, I'll be honest. You know, I came up in the born again tradition. My family was involved in that for a while, and there was a lot of quibbling over don't let the toe pop out when you go under the water and that sort of thing. I knew that would crack you up.
Okay.
Our presiding bishop, Michael Curry, says that what we are doing together as a community in this Jesus movement is we are ushering ourselves from chaos to the beloved community. And that isn't a linear process, that's a labyrinth process. We find ourselves walking in the midst of chaos as we are acknowledging and building the beloved community all around us. And so I think that our Koinonia and All Souls being a part of that Koinonia is our effort to move from chaos to the beloved community.
Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the crux questions I have is, I guess in the one-on-one work that you do with folks who are in difficult positions, Millie, in your case, survivors of violence, and I think that all of us experience this too in our day-to-day, when we have a friend in need or we come across someone who is really struggling. There are challenges in being present with folks whose conditions are that extreme. And I'm interested in how you navigate those human interactions mm-hmm. that can be so challenging, and how you maintain a presence where you draw your strength from, both as a, you know, as a community and as a group, but also as an individual and as a counselor, mm-hmm. When people mm-hmm. are in grief or loss mm-hmm. or addiction, you know, in the throes of addiction mm-hmm. and pain mm-hmm. And grief, it's, you know, being present with people mm-hmm. is hugely challenging. And certainly having a physical presence in the community where folks in extreme circumstances like that are invited, what are some of the challenges and how do you navigate that?
You know, one thing I have learned as I develop in my vocation and as my work grows is that really at the root of white supremacy, at the root of poverty, at the root of violence the consequence of this for us as a people, a collective people, is trauma, right? We're all experiencing trauma. And some of us immediately, all of us immediately, but really, regardless of the issue that the person puts in front of us, we're dealing with the impact of trauma on us. And so, you know, what we know about trauma, what I have learned about trauma in my work, is that the event, the traumatic event itself, is one thing. What really impacts us and produces a post-traumatic stress is that we feel, or the agency we have to change our situation is taken away from us. So it's not just the event itself that is traumatic and lasting. The trauma really is rooted in a lack of agency over our own lives. And so what we want to do, whether we are working on a micro level with individuals or a macro level with community, is we want to find where are the assets for you as a person, where are the assets for us as a community, for us as a church, where are our strengths, and how can we build on that so that we reconnect back to our agency to create change. And in that, we actually change our brains, the way that we think of things and the way that we respond or react. And so when we are really looking at the strength of a community, the assets of the community, which is what Kairos is ultimately aiming to do, then we help each other find our agency again to create change and impact our own lives.
What I have found, you've used the word deconstruction before, is in my interaction with friends who are in difficult places, is that it requires me to, it points out where I am not compassionate with myself, and it forces me into a compassionate headspace, even just the simplest aspect of being patient with someone's process has really deepened my ability to just listen, like you say, just listen and be present and understand their circumstances. And I personally have found incredible gifts that come back from that, being willing to be in communion with in someone that I normally, you know, I don't want to be around that, or that's inconvenient or uncomfortable. But I have learned a lot from that, as I'm sure you have also. And so you introduced me to a term, I will admit, liberation theology. And I've done a lot of reading about that since you introduced me to the idea. And I want to share with listeners just a couple of points that came up for me that I would love for you to go more deeply into. The idea overall for me, my understanding is that it is to see and understand the world from the perspective of the poor and disenfranchised in other, in many ways. Those who maybe are not able to compete to participate in the system as we have it set up with our ownership and equity and way of valuing things. Our collective cultural understanding of value is completely based on commerce, for example. So liberation from oppression, social, political, and economic. The idea that our current socioeconomic structures are inherently sinful, very powerful to me. I'm interested in that way, and in what is, how you would define sin, for example. And that God's grace is present in communion with the poor and speaks through the poor, that the voice that we hear is communicating a deeper aspect of meaning in the universe, and that industrialized countries, nations enrich themselves at the cost of developing nations. Those were concepts that jumped out to me in my research that I would love for you all to expand on, and more, anything that comes to mind.
Yeah, and I think for me too, the real foundation and powerfulness of liberation theology is its opposition to a theology that says that, you know, that God's interest in us as human beings is simply in that part of us that is called a soul. That God has no interest really in the lived experience of human beings. And if you read sacred text, it is clear that God is very much concerned, involved in standing in challenging systems of oppression over and over and over. And so liberation theology is saying we cannot call ourselves Christians and be unaware or even uncaring, if we are aware of systems of oppression, and that the basis of our faith is a challenging of empire, of systems of oppression, that when we say that we are Christians, we say that we are following somebody who was executed by the state for the work that he was doing, challenging the powerful, both the economic, but all three, the economic, the political, and the religious power structures. That is who we say we follow. And therefore, for any theology that does not found itself, base itself on that life of Christ, is selling out theology.
And liberation theology was, in fact, a counter to that. And it was saying, okay, we've gotten far, far away from our original call to be with and to walk with God in our own liberation here on earth, right? We've moved away from that. So it was a response to that in Latin America. And then it has grown because as anything that's new develops, it's going to develop with a particular voice, and then that particular voice has to grow. So it began in Latin American Catholic community, and then it grew here in America with James Cone in Black liberation theology. It grew in womanist liberation theology with folks like Dr. Emily Towns. It grew in feminist theology with folks like Dr. Carter Hayward, Reverend Carter Hayward. And so it's grown and as it does and is expansive and it, but really is the beginnings and the origins of Jesus, who we say that we follow.
Well, it's interesting, you know, what little I do know historically about the founding of your church. What, and I don't mean the cathedral, but I mean, the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about Henry VIII.
Yes. So I know. I that's just how I roll.
How much time do we have left?
The relevance, I think, is that at the time, the way the church was conducting itself in community was by extorting finances from its parishioners in order to get into heaven, right? And so really what I'm hearing is a continuation of the liberation of Christ's message from its economic imperatives.
From mm-hmm. empire.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been complicit. We have allowed ourselves, the church, we have allowed ourselves to be utilized as a tool for empire over and over and over. We forget that our salvation does not lie in powers and principalities, and we allow ourselves to be co-opted, brought into the empire as tool, and we end up being the oppressor. And so there is always that, and then there's always the counter where we go, oh, wait, that, you know, the Holy Spirit wakes us up again through mostly marginalized voices. And so when so this goes back to Kairos and what Naomi was saying about when we leave people out that don't own land, that aren't stakeholders, we're missing this voice that offers us a counter to empire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to then just speak out on behalf of nature, which the idea of owning it is just farcical. And I also want to mention, since we're together again, Anne Boleyn, and would encourage folks to look at her role in that process.
Mm.
And we have about 5 more minutes. I know, I told you we need another hour. But I would like to hear your personal histories and your personal choices about what brought you to this work. Mm. And in the last week of getting ready to speak with you this week, I had a conversation with my eldest child about why are people prejudiced and why is there greed and what is the source of that? And my proposal was that it's fear-based. And my young person is a millennial and says, no, it's just evil.
Mm.
It's just evil. Mm. And it's I don't know what to say to him, but I feel like, you know, you've been touched by what most people would identify as evil, and I'm interested in how you took that and turned it into a motivating factor for what you do for our community.
So, I mean, for me, the work around racial justice especially has been like my life, and I always tell people that actually comes out of a place of sheer laziness. Like, you know, like when people say to me, when people ask, you know, so what justice issue are you going to be involved in? I looked in the mirror and I saw a black woman and I was like, oh, racial and gender justice makes sense right away, right? But it comes out for me, the work comes out, first of all, being raised in South Africa and raised during apartheid, and particularly in thinking of the people who went before me, whose experience of life, particularly when I always go back to my grandmothers, that their experience of life was so limited by racism and sexism, and that they were amazing women even in that context. And so believing that if the world had had the opportunity to really access the gifts of women like my grandmothers, we might have a cure for cancer. We would have a more just society. And so that's what has brought me into the work, that I believe at the core of my being that we as a whole world suffer because people of color cannot walk on the streets sharing fully the gifts that they have because we are so dealing with the daily microaggressions and not so microaggressions. And that is what called me to the work of racial justice, and also what called me to the work of being an ordained clergy person.
For me, as a social worker, I was always working with folks who had been hurt by violence, and I worked in the hospitals where I would meet rape survivors following the crime, and I would help them navigate the legal system and the medical system and just be a first responder in the sense of you are not alone, right? So that was my role as a social worker. And I met a particular person once, and God, I would always say this prayer before I would go into the room. I would say, God, allow me to be present with whatever is on the other side of this door. Allow me simply to be present. And so one day I walked in, and the person had been so badly hurt that you could only see their eyes. So I sat down with them, and I looked at them, and I said, I am here. You are not alone. I will stay with you. And all of a sudden, it was so clear to me that all I had to offer this person was prayer and communion. And in that moment, I was no longer a social worker. I was a priest. Mm. And I knew it in my bones, and I felt it so clearly. And of course, I couldn't pray with that person because I was in the role of social worker, and I did my job, and it was. But when I got up and left, I was different. Mm-hmm. And I went to my priest the next day and in tears said, I'm called to the sacraments. And from that moment on, it took me 12 years to get through the process, which is a whole nother radio program. I have known that my real work is in gathering people, feeding them, and then sending them out to build the kingdom of God.
Mm. Well, I think a whole nother show is also holy orders and what that call is and all the different ways that it can manifest. So I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being in our community and for the work that you do.
Thank you as well. And thank you for having us.
And for hanging out at Asheville FM.
What a great place.
Yeah, I think so. Good. I'm so glad. I hope it was a nice break.
It was. Peace.
Indeed. Indeed.
So, again, you are listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 Asheville. You've been listening to Local Fauna, which is a weekly talk show that focuses on alternative education, food systems, racial equity, social justice, healing, the empowering of the people, and all the other good witchy things that make a difference in my world, all the things I love. So I'm going to leave you to some music. Democracy Now! Is next. And again, thank you to the Reverend Canon Naomi Tutu and the Reverend Canon Millie Morrow from the Cathedral of All Souls. And you can learn more about the work that they are doing at kairoswest.org. And the Cathedral of All Souls also has a great website with some sermons from you all. And I encourage everyone to go. It's a gorgeous building, of course, historical and beautiful. And the message that they have to deliver, as you've been hearing, is one that I think is relevant for all. So
thank you. And thank all you. Are welcome. All are welcome. Come join us.
Any last pieces of information there that I might have left out?
No, that's great. We just really do encourage anybody who would like to come and be with us Sundays 9 or 11:15.
Or 7:45. There might be some early risers.
Or 7:45. I won't be there, but Naomi will this Sunday, 7:45.
All right. All right, folks. Have a wonderful week.